Well, a very good evening to you out there, and thanks for tuning in to another Terrace Talk here on Monday evening with me, Donal Barry. And before we start this evening, I want to thank you, and well, actually thank all of you who have helped us, I suppose, with our JNLR figures for the show during the last week. I suppose it was a bit like getting the Leaving Cert results around the place, but our figures are out and they've pushed up yet again, and it's really exciting to see that. And a big thank you for each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday evening, and I suppose a big thank you as well to our football and hurling pundits, and Dan Kearney as well, who helps out with the ladies. It all helps and gathers support, and it's all fantastic. But of course, we're sitting them all out here this evening as we bring you a very busy and exciting show. I suppose a different sort of a show this evening, because we're going to, I suppose, run around the county. We're going to have Kerry Hurler, Fionnuala O'Sullivan on there just before 7 o'clock. Eimear Foley, she's going to be on as well in the next hour. We're talking about a very kind of exciting coaching seminar above there in MTU. And we have one of the biggest names, I think, in female sport currently in the kingdom, who very few people will actually know who she is at all. And we'll be putting a bit of light on that, and she's hoping to become Kerry's first ever world junior champion boxer, and all that in the second hour. And in the second hour as well, we'll be talking to Colm Keyes and Dermot Riley on their fantastic new book, Chasing Sam Maguire, which I have a copy of here to give away this evening. Ivan is mad to give away something this evening, so we'll get an old question out there in a couple of minutes, and once you give an old answer, we'll put you in there. And as ever, if you want to contact us, I suppose at this stage everybody in the county knows now, it is 0667123666, and it's 083 300 3300. And I suppose the other thing over the last number of weeks, I suppose, on the show, we've been busy, I suppose, talking about the Garvey Super Value Senior County Football Championship, and there's plenty going on and off the field, I suppose, to be fair, but other championships were reaching their finales as well, and on tonight's show we're going to look back in the company of two of those, the novice and the junior, in the company of Lisboa and Renard. We're going west and south for our quick journey this evening, and indeed I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Kevin Griffin, who I know as some other fella, but he does tell me he's the chairman of Lisboa, which is fantastic. We'll ask that. Tom Baker, who looks young enough to be a player, but he is the manager, he told me. And Eamon Begley, who's still young enough to be a player, and he pointed out to me off air that he played in the final as well. Very important. Eamon, first of all, congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Another medal for the mantelpiece.
Yeah, very good now, yeah. So we won the novice there, I suppose, last weekend.
What's it like? I mean, people will say it's a final. It's not the county final that East Kerry and Mid Kerry were playing.
Well, any kind of day you win a county final, I suppose.
Absolutely.
It was novice.
Yeah.
But any day you win a county medal is very enjoyable.
Yeah. And what was it like itself? I mean, like, at final whistle, it was extra time. It was an exciting enough game.
Yeah, for about 80 minutes, wasn't it? It was long.
Yeah, I'd say you aged over the hour during the game.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Very much, yeah. But that was a very good win now, so.
Yeah.
It's good, yeah, after we won out 5 earlier in the year. That was our main target, to win out Division 5, and we won that.
Yeah.
And then we went into the juniors, but we didn't do that, so we came down to the novice. But it was very good, yeah, to win the novice.
Yeah, and it's a good way to end the year as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is, yeah.
With a bit of silverware. I dare say you had plenty enjoyment and plenty of crack.
We did, yeah. We had a good night out now, Saturday night afterwards, and then we brought the cup up to the kids were training on Sunday morning. We brought it up to them, so that was very important as well for all the young ones, the young kids that were coming through, and they saw. It was about 9 or 10 of the football team went up there, so
brilliant.
That was good, yeah.
And of course, Tom Baker, that's part of the club as well. I mean, the winning is the one thing, but I suppose putting those memories in the next generation of kids and seeing, you know, that there's something at the end of the line. Is there more pressure on a manager when you're a novice manager than maybe Gerry O'Sullivan, when Gerry looks at his pick and he knows he has 35 players and his biggest job is to leave off fellas, your job is to find fellas maybe to put on?
Yeah, I suppose there are different ends of the spectrum, and Gerry is a great problem, must be an easy job, I'd say, when you have so many fellas to pick from. But yeah, it's a challenge down in junior and novice and in Division 5, I suppose. You know, it's a rural club, small club, everybody matters, and it's hard to keep the show on the road sometimes, but you know, I suppose we're very lucky as well. We have a great bunch behind, nice panel. The numbers mightn't be big, but what's there is very important to us, and they do a great job. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the numbers are small, Tom, apart from talent, commitment must be huge. I mean, that has to be the one thing, to have the guys training, to have the guys travelling, to have the guys there, and I suppose to have the guys looking after each other as well, in the sense not getting injured and the whole lot. Commitment is huge at this level.
It is huge. You have to have buy-in. You know, anyone that's there, they need to work hard. You know, everything is getting so difficult, and S&Cs and fitness, everything is changing now, and it's just as hard to win in Division 5 as it is Division 1. It's the same thing. And you know, I suppose for us, we set out to win Division 5 this year as a goal or a target, and we achieved that. And I suppose if you're winning, it doesn't really matter then, because, you know, they'll buy into it, the players will buy into it, you're playing it to win. So if you are winning, it's a little bit easier. But we do struggle with numbers, but like I say, winning is the name of the game, and while you are winning, that'll keep fellas interested and they're enjoying it then, you know.
Yeah, there'll be guys out listening to us this evening, and I suppose, look, I fly the small club flag all the time because I understand what numbers are. When you say struggling with numbers, what's that in black and white terms?
So in black and white, I suppose all of this year we would have had no more than 20, 21 fellas. That would be max, like. I suppose for the County League, it wasn't so bad. And then we sustained some injuries around June, July area, our time. And we got 7 injuries altogether. So that basically put us out of a junior. So it was a case of fielding a team then for the summer. And that's, you're down to nuts and bolts then. You have maybe 3 or 4 training on a Wednesday night. Whereas maybe in March, we would have had 12, 13 on a Wednesday. And at the weekend, it's a bit bigger, all right, because the lads come home, you know. There's big drives, there's Dublin, Limerick, Cork, Galway, there's all these fellas coming down home, which is a massive commitment, but they all need to for it to work, you know, because training 3 or 4 is no good. You need to have the numbers, but the panel is very tight, and like I said at the outset, everybody matters, you know.
Absolutely. Kevin, when you hear Tom using a term, everyone comes home, I mean, the club is the home, really, to be fair. And I suppose not every home is the same size. I mean, obviously some clubs are this size and some clubs have an awful lot of houses in the home as well. How is it to juggle a club like that? I mean, you still have the same headaches as bigger clubs. Are they bigger headaches because they're smaller headaches?
Possibly, but I suppose, yeah, look, we are a small rural club in West Kerry, but a very proud club. And even this year, the novice, I mean, you couldn't but be incredibly proud and of the sacrifice the whole team and the management make all year. You know, we've guys travelling from Cork, from Limerick, down from Kildare. There's just a lot of work goes into sustain a small rural club. And I suppose what we found this year, the last 2 years, we've got some great young talent coming in. You know, if I take 2020, we'd Mark Manning on the Kerry Miners. He's come in. 2021, we've Cormac Kindy. 2022, we've James Fitzgerald. So you need young blood coming in all the time. There's great work being done underage. I have to acknowledge Colm Hannifin, who's the juvenile chairman. Excellent work done underage. And like that, it's great to see the cup going up to into the Sunday morning training session, and to encourage the future to to continue on.
Yeah. It's amazing when you say that a small rural club back in West Kerry who has 4 or 5 the odd night of training, maybe 12 or 13, producing a Kerry minor every single year for 3 years in a row. I mean, that most big clubs can't do that.
Yeah, well, it comes in cycles, I guess. We probably would have gone a good few years before that. We heard the last time Brian Rail, I think, in 2015. So we just, sometimes you get lucky, you get a couple of them in a row, and it's great to have them. But like that, you still need 12, 10 others which to make up the numbers. You know, you're still really relying on, you know, buying across the board and everyone putting their shoulders to the wheel and ensuring we have enough numbers each.
Yeah, absolutely. Eamon, Division 5, it was a division I spent my lifetime playing in nearly 25 years ago when it was a really tough division to get out of. Speak to us about how difficult a division it is to get out of, because people will think, oh, Division 5 is way down there, but sometimes the divisions that are way down there are a lot harder to get out of, because you never go to the field with the same team that you had last week. You have 4 fellas missing, or you have a couple of fellas injured, or you might be playing a team that didn't have 4 or 5 fellas last week and they're all back down again. So lots of different challenges down there.
Yeah, I suppose we 2 years ago we nearly got out of 5. I think we was it 1 point off getting out of it, but that was the main aim then this year. But like you said then, I suppose with the numbers we have, there were some games I think we only travelled with 15 or 16 players, but we did very well this year. I suppose we had a few long journeys all right to go, and I think we won nearly all of our games in 5. I think we just lost one game to Waterville, I think, and we won all the rest of our games. So there was a few long journeys in it, and numbers was obviously the main problem. Like I said, with a few injuries we picked up during the year, there was a few games we only had a team. That was it.
It's a nice spin to Waterville.
Yeah, Waterville. Yeah, I think it was nearly two hours. Was it? Waterville, yeah, it was a long drive. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, it's a good drive the other way as well, I suppose. Yeah. It's when the fixtures come out.
I think they come back the year before.
Looking at it now, next year, I mean, are ye in twos saying, God, Division 4, new teams, new faces, new places to travel, new trips, maybe meeting some of your neighbours? I don't know, there might be neighbours inside there as well, yeah, along the journey. But how important is it to kind of get away from those annual trips down to Waterville and now focus on different teams, yeah, different challenges?
It's very important with all the young lads like they were saying coming through.
Yeah.
I think we should do well for next year.
Yeah.
And we'd be aiming, I suppose, now after winning the novice, we'll have to be looking towards the junior, I think, next year.
Yeah.
If we keep our full panel for the junior, we should have a good rattle at it next year.
Do you see putting fierce pressure on you, Tom, already? You're going to win the junior now, and straight out of four, anyway, up to three, is it?
Yeah, well, stay in four, I suppose, and try. Well, if we can try.
Absolutely.
The main thing is trying to stay in four anyway. Yeah.
Does the challenge and the target change next year now, Tom? I mean, you have the cup, it's a bit of success. Obviously, if things worked out, you know, you probably were looking at the Junior Cup maybe or whatever, but I mean, if you do sustain seven injuries and your panel is small, you kind of have to do the best you can with what you have and the competition that you're in. But looking ahead to next year, how much of a development will having that cup and the fact that you have won five and you have a bit of momentum behind you, are you looking ahead now to four, and is it kind of we'll try and hang out and develop in four, or you're sure we'll give it an old rattle and see how it goes?
I'll definitely contradict Eamon there. It'll be promotion, definitely.
Straight out.
It's time to get to three, and you know, we've a phenomenal team. It might be small but mighty, is that what they say,
yeah,
isn't it? Look, we've a gentle mix of really talented young lads, but we've got senior players there that are there for a long time, and they know exactly what it takes to win. So there's a lovely little mix there, and I think promotion is definitely on the cards, and mm-hmm, we'll be targeting the junior to win it with confidence, I would like to think. Yeah, I suppose a big bearing would be on what'll happen with the minors when,
yes,
they come through and stuff. You know, there'd be three other guys coming in.
Explain the effect that will have on a rural club. I presume you're talking about the 17s and the 18s and whether the couple and the whole lot. Maybe explain that to kind of listeners who wouldn't be in the loop, even though I imagine everybody is in that loop.
It's tough going. Like, three other guys coming into our panel is massive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a huge percentage of the overall team. So for them to come through, that could mean next year being very successful or not. You know, we don't hang our coat on it, but we definitely need them. You know, we're going out there this summer barely fielding teams. That puts you into a more comfortable position, I suppose, and I don't think we'll have a year like this year with all those injuries. But if you've three of those lads coming through and they're well able to play football, all three of them, and the underage and the minor setup is really strong in Lisbon, and they've done a great job, so I think them coming through would be massive for us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, of course, that's a debate, that's kind of a wider debate with I suppose the county board and a whole lot, but it is an actual debate that needs to be had.
It certainly is. Like, I think everyone in the county, in the country, probably believes under 18 is the correct age for minors. It's just the consequences with a small rural club when you really are relying on 18-year-olds, not to make up good teams, but for survival, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a huge issue. Full 18, full decoupling would be a disaster, really, for small rural clubs. So I suppose the Lisbon, our position, we were hoping that perhaps there might be a derogation option on the table where maybe the junior clubs would be allowed the 18-year-olds for maybe windows of the year. We understand minor competitions have to be played, fixtures need to be arranged, but we believe at the moment the options is full decoupling at 18 or full decoupling at 17. You know, we would have hoped that the junior clubs would have been consulted, a forum perhaps with the junior clubs, and come up with a solution that fits all. At the moment, it certainly doesn't fit. What's been on the table is not suiting the small rural clubs. Mm. And
Have Cork kind of led away in this, as far as I know? I mean, they've kind of half decided that if you're junior or below, you can kind of decouple away down there, but you can't have much a bigger club.
Yeah, exactly. What the Cork model is something that we certainly would work for us.
And it's an understandable model in a sense, because what it's doing is it's giving clubs players to keep the flag flying, I suppose, in many senses, as opposed to giving bigger clubs better players who might even displace players on a panel.
Absolutely, that's why we need the 18-year-olds. It's about, you know, to keeping the competitions running. Like, for example, we were in Division 5 this year. Two of our games, the opposition conceded games. You know, I mean, you'd have a lot more games conceded. Mm-hmm. The novice, I would imagine, would struggle to run that competition. You know, because teams, junior clubs, rural clubs are struggling for numbers. As it comes, you could come to the summer, you could have a couple of guys missing on holidays, all of a sudden you're down to 15 players, 16 mm-hmm. players, you know. So it's a big issue. I just hope common sense will prevail. Unfortunately, the only our position at the moment will have to be to stick with the status quo, to vote on the status quo, to keep it under 17, for the simple fact there is no under 18 partial decoupling option or derogation option for a small club on the table. So that's our position. But look, it's up to all the clubs to carry to vote,
yeah.
And look, we'll respect the vote whichever way it goes.
And you kind of, in a sense, hoping that bigger clubs not only listen but kind of understand what you're saying as well, because sometimes you go to county board meetings and because it's not a problem for us, we don't really care about it in that sense. I mean, whereas there should be kind of an understanding that God knows down the line this could happen to us as well.
Certainly, absolutely, and that's our feeling.
Yeah.
At the
because
moment,
this ball going back over the years, I mean, you won West Kerry finals for fun at one stage, didn't you?
We did. In the 80s was a golden era for the club, certainly. Yeah, we would have won 6 West Kerry championships in a row and a junior championship in 84. We probably would have been the backbone of the 84 and 85 West Kerry teams that won the county.
And you would have been seen in the 80s as a big team. I remember St. Mary's going back to Lisbon and was like, wow, they're going back to Lisbon. that's a big team they're playing. That was a big team at the time.
I believe like Lisbon would have got to Division 1 of the County League there in the late 70s and would have played regularly Division 2 all during that era. So, all clubs go through cycles. We're looking at the Novice Cup here in front of us. I see Temple Now mm-hmm. in 2013.
And the Gael
in 2010.
Well,
like, so, yeah, look, it's cycles, I guess.
Yeah.
And
But you have to keep spinning the cycle. Eamon, retirement? Hardly, surely.
No, there's another year or two in me anyway. Yeah, I'm one of the older lads right now on the team, but
What's it like being one of the older lads in the team? I mean, coming from a country club myself, I went from being a young lad to an old lad fairly quickly, I'd imagine. But what's it like? I mean, does it bring a different dynamic? I mean, you're looking at the guys that you would have played with, watching you now play, and you're probably playing with their nephews or sons or whatever it is. What's that dynamic like?
I know, it's very enjoyable now, seeing all the young lads coming through. There's a lot of lads coming through minors in the last few years, but like I said, I'd be one of the older lads, but there's a few lads around my age that are still on the panel. But yeah, it's very enjoyable to see a lot of the younger lads coming through, and we'll stay on another few years to hopefully get a few more cups with them.
Jesus, if we could bottle that enthusiasm, Tom.
Yeah.
Come here, Tom. Was there evenings where you were kind of going through your WhatsApp group saying, Christ, we mightn't have a team at all for Saturday?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's a very regular occurrence, unfortunately.
What happens in that instance? I mean, in reality, like, I mean, you get a text towards the night and Johnny's got the flu, or he's after going over his leg, or his missus wants him to have family dinner or something, he can't go back to Waterville or somewhere like that. What's the plan B? Is there a plan B?
There isn't really. You make sure we don't concede a game. We haven't conceded a game in years, thank God. You just find a way. You find the guy that'll just jump into the car with you and head away down to a Waterville or wherever it'll be. And in fairness, it's a great community back there. You know, we have a great parish and a lot of good people back there, and they'll always throw their shoulder to the wheel. And we've never not had a team. There mightn't have been great teams now travelling out the road, but yeah, look, it's a constant struggle, and that's where we're at. You know, 3 fellas coming in next year from the minors, that'll make a massive difference, and it maybe cuts those WhatsApp messages by 50% or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, of course, if they're coming in, they're eager to come in as well, and I suppose young fellas want to play, and they're not going to have as many excuses at the start of the season anyway to not want to play. It's a club, and clubs need money and clubs need structure, and Kevin looks like a guy who brings structure and money to the club. What's it like running the club from that instance? I mean, obviously financially you need to keep it going, you have a couple of events coming up, I'd imagine.
Yeah, look, it's a privilege to be involved with the club. As Tom said, it's a tremendous community to be involved with. At the moment we've a big plans. Our current sports hall has been there for 40 years. It's been a tremendous asset to the community, but it's in need of a significant upgrade and extension. So we have big plans there to do a big upgrade, and it's a case of increasing our court area, new dressing rooms, new gym, community spaces upstairs. So it's a very ambitious project. We've planning permission in place. It's over a million euro of a project. The target is to have it complete for 2027, because we're hosting Comórtas Pell in the Gaeltacht in 2027, which is it's an honour and a privilege to come on Comórtas Pell in Lisbon and Comórtas Arachdal in Lisbon. So yeah, we're working towards that. That's the the target for completion. We're hoping to secure up to 80% funding through the various grants we've applied for: Sports Capital Regional, a regional Sports Capital Grant, and the Town and Village Renewal Scheme at this point. But there's further grants coming down the track, community investment funds. And we've launched our first fundraiser, which is €24,000 cash prize. The draw takes place in January, so we're selling tickets at the moment to 1 for 20, 3 for 50, 9 for 100. And look, I want to thank, we have received incredible support to date. This fundraiser has been running since August, and we've received tremendous support across the peninsula. And yeah, tickets are available online as well on the listbowl.com. so yeah, that's part of our off the field developments, and it's a facility for the future generations. The location is right beside the school. It's for the whole of the community. It's not just a GA project. It's for the full community, and yeah, it's something that we're working towards big time.
And you'll surely make a few bob off in Owl Skull and Dingle next week, will you? Are they visiting you for the West Kerry final?
Yes, the West Kerry Championship.
You're like the Eurovision now. You mightn't be competing, but you can host it.
Well, I think the West Kerry board will probably make the most money out of that, but we'll certainly.
They surely have a side gate or something, will they?
We'll do
your best. Well, sure, lotto tickets or something, for the name of God. If you're an Omniscall fan or a Dingle fan, we'll throw them a few bob. They're in Division 4 and they're on the rise.
As I was saying, just to finish on that, yeah, look, it is a really exciting time in the community and in the club of Lisbon. We've got young talent coming through, and we've a lot of stuff, developments taking place off the field as well. So look, it's a great time in the sport at the moment, and the future looks bright.
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll be back this time next year. You'll have announced a new...
I know, I'll come back. I'll take a month off and be back training again at the end of the year, maybe.
That's commitment for you, Tom. Huh? Just the month off. Yeah. Yeah. Well, nobody should play football in December anyway, to be fair. Might as well take it off. Tom, the very best of luck to you next year. Has the board complete faith in you now as well to take the team forward? I mean, we never discussed that.
Contract negotiations.
Usually if you get the vote of support, you're in trouble, isn't it?
Yeah, I've no comments.
I'd say he'd manage them through Division 4, all right, I'd say. And you have 24 grand to collect between, or give out, I suppose, and that's coming up in January. And if you want to support it, you can go to, you have your own website as well. What is it? Onad Lisbowl.
Onad Lisbowl.
Oscailge. Oh, God.
.com.
The West Kerry Gaelga.
Shinee, yeah.
Absolutely. I suppose it's the only type, really, isn't it? To the best part. Listen, Eamon, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
This time next year, you'll have a bigger junior medal,
yeah,
hopefully. I'll go mail.
That's the plan, yeah.
Do hold off on the retirement anyway for a while, okay, until the decoupling comes in. Tom, the very best of luck next year. Great not to be travelling back to Waterville. Did Waterville come out with you?
They came up, they gave us plenty to do down there. Now they came away with the spoils on the day, yeah, but fair play to them. We'll be meeting them next year. Yeah
hopefully you'll have home advantage in your new in your new dressing rooms and the whole lot. Listen, Kevin, Tom and Eamon, the very best look this evening, and look, congratulations on all you've done this year. It's a hard enough story being a small rural club, and it's great to share it. And after the break, we're going to share another story from another rural club, and they're down in South Kerry, and that's Reynard. We'll take a break.
From the sidelines to the stand, Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, chasing Sam Maguire, the All-Ireland Football Championship story from 1928 to 1977, and we have a book to give away, and the question out this evening is all we need to know is that what Kerry man lifted the Sam Maguire in 1975, or who was the last Kerry man to lift the Sam Maguire between that 1928 and 1977 period? And Ivan is in there, and give him a ring on the phone, 0667123666, or text on 0833003300. Now, just before the break, we were chatting to Lisbowl and their fine novice county final win, and now it's the turn to head south, down to South Kerry, I suppose, to check in with another small club, even though I suppose in many ways they probably wouldn't like to be called a small club. A small club with big ambitions and a big heart on the outskirts of Carsevine town, and they are the current junior football champions, having dispatched Tarbert there recently in the final that was played, I suppose, in Ossensack Park as part of the double header. I'm delighted to have manager Brian Sullivan on the phone, and Darcy O'Connell, of course, the vice chair of the club. First of all, Brian, congratulations. You were celebrating this time last week. I presume you're still kind of celebrating.
Hi, Donal, how are you? Thanks very much. Yeah, well, Sunday, Monday was enough for me anyway, Donal. I think the younger lads kept going for a few more days, but you know what, there was no harm in that either. They deserve to blow off a bit of steam after the work they put in all year.
Yeah, and that's a very important point to start with, I suppose, to be fair. I mean, it is about celebrating that journey, getting over the line, because, I mean, to get to this journey, I suppose the last time you won something was back around 2000 or 2001. I can remember you losing the final to Kiel a long time ago, and then you beat Two Sisters in the final. But I mean, there's been a lot of kind of false dawns along the way. I mean, it's incredibly great to get over the line eventually, and not only, I presume, do the players get a chance to blow off a bit of steam, but all the supporters and all those journeys, because that's 20 seasons of a journey to get over this line.
You're right, though, and you know what, it's something that I didn't really realise how much it meant to everyone. I'll be honest with you, it kind of took me by surprise afterwards. You're right, we lost to Kiel in that final. I think that was in 2001 we beat Two Sisters in the novice final. 2006 then, was it 2006? It was, we lost to Douai. Mm-hmm. in the junior final, and then 2019 we lost to Ballyduff in the junior final as well. So it was, first of all, it was great for this group of players that may have been involved 4 years ago to get over the line. So I was just delighted for them. But secondly, it took me by surprise what it actually meant to everyone in the club afterwards. I'm not sure who organised it now, but it was a lovely thing. What happened Sunday evening is first port of call was to call down to the clubhouse at 7:30 on Sunday after winning. And that's where all the supporters gathered and all the players. And it was a great idea now, to be fair, whoever organised it. It was lovely for, you know, maybe some people might have been comfortable going to the pub to meet everyone. So it was great to just go down to the club. And one of the things that really struck me, or that I really enjoyed, was afterwards, inside in the dressing room, Morris Lynch came into us. Mm-hmm. Now, for people who wouldn't be familiar with Morris was a club stalwart for many, many years, and kept the club running. You know, he did Trojan work down through the years. So for him to come into the dressing room and to see the delight on his face was great. And you know what, it was very important for the younger players to see that. You know, just that little few minutes there in the dressing room to see the delight on Morris's face just kind of showed the younger lads what it means. You know, you can be talking all you want, but for them to see that, it shows what it means to everyone in the club, what they do on the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Morris, a gentleman, of course, and he'd done umpire and bits of linesman, and I suppose with teams all down the years, which was 14 or 16, or at the odd time with the senior as well. You're also joined by Darcy O'Connell, the vice chair, of course, of the club. Darcy, I suppose it's nice at the best of times to get yourself into a final. Winning it, as you know, is incredibly hard to do it, but you've done it in impressive fashion. Is that the best way to win a final?
Dol, how are you? I suppose it is, really, Dol. You know, it meant a lot to the club, as Brian just went through there, and Brian, being very modest, didn't point out that Brian actually has two medals in the junior, as he won it as part of the panel in 2001 as well.
He should have been playing.
And the manager.
Fair play.
Definitely, and I mean, I suppose in fairness to Brian and Kevin Kelly, who was with him there on the management team, and Marie Teehan, who does all the physio for us, you know, I suppose we started the competition strongly and carried that through the whole way. You know, I mean, it was, you know, we were very strong in it. I suppose it's a competition that the lads were aiming for from the start of the year, really, you know, to try and move up along the ranks and things like that, you know, and it was important. I think it was, I suppose, nice for us, maybe not so nice for Tarbert, but, you know, to win it in a decisive fashion like that, and, you know, Tarbert are a better team. Mm-hmm. Than it was on the day. You know, we've played Tarbert down through the last number of years and had some very, very, very tight battles with them. But it was our day on Sunday, and I think our lads were up for it. They were hungry. They were, you know, we'd been there. We've been in three, I suppose we've been in three finals and lost them. So, you know, it was nice to finally get over the line and, you know, to step forward for the club, like, and for the players.
Mm-hmm. And Darcy, speak to me about the club, because people will say tonight, Renard, they're down there in South Kerry somewhere. But it's unusual enough that yourselves, Filemore, dare I say, and St. Mary's share a very small parish.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of the anomalies of the district board set up, you know, that you have in Kerry. And I suppose there's been a lot of talk about it lately, but I suppose the district board has always served the clubs of South Kerry very well. And has strengthened them, and you know, I suppose it has brought on players that have been able to make the district team and things. But I suppose it shows there's great rivalry between all the clubs in South Kerry and ourselves, and I suppose the neighbour St Mary's. That always be a bit of banter and a bit of rivalry. They've probably been in the higher levels than us now regarding the intermediate and things like that, but we're both in Division 3 next year, so we might have another cut off each other. But I think the thing that showed about the division and about the, we'll say, the structure of the South Kerry Divisional Board is the amount of support we got both on the day and in the days leading up to it, to the final. Like, I just know personally at work, a lot of older people from different clubs would have called in just to give their support, just to wish us the best of luck. And I think it was seen by people on the day up there, you know, maybe, you know, Brian and the players were focused on the field and on everything else, but for those of us in the stand, you know, it was a great show of support to see people coming up from the other clubs of South Kerry to watch and support us there on the day, you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Brian, talk to us about that support, because I suppose there's been a lot of debate lately about the fact that the districts don't seem to garner the actual support with the flags and the banners and the whole lot. There was no shortages of support and crowd support in Austin Stack Park for Renard. I mean, that must be quite special when the boys run out from the tunnel and they have, I suppose, their brothers and the sisters and their mothers and the fathers and the neighbours and the whole lot, but not just there to clap you, but to bring the flags and bring the noise, I suppose.
Yeah, do you know what, Donald? Someone actually mentioned that to me. They put it to me, actually, the same thing you just said there. I'll be honest with you, I didn't hear any noise on the day. I was just kind of focusing on what we had to do. But in hindsight, when I look back and looking at it on the video, there was huge support for us, which I was delighted for. And in fairness, like, not just the last day, we do have great supporters in this club, in fairness to them. And you know, they've gone through a lot up and down through the years, but they really turned out the last day, which we were really grateful for. And just on the point Darcy made there as well, one aspect of it as well, the whole process of being in a final, which I didn't take any notice of, was the best wishes and the text messages from people involved in other clubs, in the affiliated with other clubs in South Kerry, and also affiliated with other clubs in the county. It kind of took me back a little bit, you know, the message of goodwill we were receiving beforehand and afterwards. And it was actually a lovely part of the whole process that I hadn't really bargained for, you know.
Yeah. And of course, I suppose another side story to it, I mean, I suppose there's so many side stories to finals. The young guy that you had in the middle of the field, he was also being honoured afterwards as being one of the best players of this, the senior championship. What's it like to have some guy like Killian Young that you can call on?
Ah, sure, it's unbelievable. Like, it's just unbelievable to have someone of his experience. And like, Killian was always known as someone who had a great head for the game, you know. So to have the likes of him there training. So he came back, I think it was July, he came back this year. And just to have him around for the younger lads was great help in the, just around the club in the training sessions, and just his tactical awareness and his experience on the field on the day really helped. And you know what? He really stood out the last day as well, and he had a great game, which I was delighted for him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Renard, no, I mean, we were talking to Lispol. I mean, everybody sets different targets. I mean, they jumped from 5 to 4 and you know, they won the novice and they want to have a better off, I suppose, the junior next year. It's hard year to year with Renard, I'd imagine, because I'd say, Brian, if you sat down and you wanted to figure out the best 15 Renard players in the whole of the world, there'd be a lot of them not in Renard.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Look, that affects us as much as any other club, especially in South Kerry, you know. And it's just, I suppose, Donald, the way things go with depopulation and all that, what happens down here is, and I'll just talk about what happens this year specifically, is lads have to leave here to go working and to go to college. And for us to expect lads to turn out and put on a jersey on a weekend, that means them having to leave Cork, Dublin, Limerick, wherever, on a Friday evening to travel home to play and travel back on a Sunday. Like, I think it was four lads coming from Dublin for us this year. You know, that involves hopping into a car on a Friday evening for 4 or 5 hours and doing the same on Sunday evening. That's 10 hours of your weekend gone just to play football at home, you know. So the commitment is huge. It's very, very hard for fellas to sustain that for a long period. So especially down in South Kerry, that issue is an issue for us and other clubs, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Darcy, looking at the club as a whole, I mean, Renard always struck me as a club that they'd done their business the right way. I mean, I was looking at some of the drone footage the last night. I don't know if it was Kerry Airport or Croke Park you were showing. But the field development over the last number of years, the track around it, an awful lot of fine work going into the place.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, look, we're not a big club, you know. We're a small club there, just one part of the parish. But the amount of volunteers we have, the amount of people that are willing to help out, you know, like just this weekend gone now, we hosted the South Kerry semi-final, South Kerry Championship semi-final for the first time on the new field. It was fantastic to see a huge crowd down there. The amount of people we had out selling lotto tickets, doing car parking, you know, just everything helps. And, you know, I suppose, like every club, whether you're a small club or a big club, we're ambitious and we're proud of our own stature, like, and we like to continue to keep improving and keep moving onwards. But no, the facilities down there now are top notch, and you know, we've got a lot of praise from them, from people that have come down, whether it's referees from away or other teams or the local clubs and things like that, you know. So we're very proud of what we have down there, very proud of our club members that always put the shoulder to the wheel or the hand in the pocket whenever they're asked.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The big pocket stones there in Carstavine, you should put their hand in a few times for you, maybe. Come here, Darcy. Talk to us about the rest of the club. I mean, obviously, I suppose you have the senior team, and I suppose in most clubs that life begins and ends there, but in reality life begins at juvenile and what you do on a Saturday or Sunday morning with the 8 or 10 kids or the couple of girls that you have as well. Speak to us about your juvenile section.
Yeah, it's getting a bit harder all the time, you know. The numbers is a big issue, you know. We're all the clubs in South Kerry down here now, including Renard. I mean, once you kind of leave under 9s or definitely under 11s, you're amalgamated with other clubs, and it's becoming more and more clubs, you know. One time it was enough just maybe ourselves and St Mary's, but now Valentia joined with us, and Skelly Grange has joined with St Michael's Filemore, and you know, you have the four clubs out south then of Sneem, Derrynane, Timpano, Two Sis. So it's definitely an issue, and it's definitely a problem. But look, I suppose when we have low numbers, maybe we retain more people, mm-hmm. in that they're all needed, and you know, that, I mean, you always have people that go away from the football, and that's, it's not for everybody, and that's the way it is. But it is, you know, it is an issue. But I mean, at the moment we have a nice number of players involved in our senior panel, and look, if you can keep bringing through 2, 3, 4 every year from your up through your 15s into your minors, and from your minors into your senior, you know, it keeps the spirit of the club alive.
Mm, absolutely. Brian, the same question I suppose asked Tom Baker earlier. The board must have complete faith in you. Are you under contract negotiations with the executive gang? But looking ahead to next year, all going well, what's the target? What's the plan? I mean, obviously you're going to say, oh, sure, we haven't sat down yet to discuss it, or we must. But somewhere in the background, Brian Sullivan sees where this Renard team has the ability to go in the next 12 months.
Ah, yeah, I don't know. You are right. There's been no sitting down talking about next year yet. We've just kind of need the dust settled on this year. But I suppose from the start of this year, really, we set out in the county league just to be very, very honest, just to avoid relegation. Honestly, that was just the outline. And then as the county league progressed, and the more work the boys did, the more confidence they got after a few results, it turned out that we ended up finishing the county league 2 points off promotion to 2. So that was a very good county league for us, comparing to where our ambitions would have been at the start. So for next year, the hopefully, you always try building every year. So I suppose we finished this year 6th in Division 3, so hopefully to build on that. And now we're into the Junior Premier, and I mean, there's always a little bit of luck involved in terms of the draws you get and everything, mm-hmm. but you'd have to hope that we try progressing the Junior Premier next year.
Then, of course,
we're over 30 years winning a South Kerry Championship. There has to be ambition to try to go one better in that as well, you know.
You can't have John Joe Horton running around the place back there talking about the last man to win a medal, is it? and all the other Whartons that were with him on the same day. Of course, that was 1989. I'd say I was a small boy that day. I got drunk with watching it anyway. And Renard got a vital goal, and it was enough to beat Valencia, as far as I remember. And Valencia were the big team at the time. Brian, final question, and it's just a comment that came in, I suppose, recently. How important is the County League to clubs? I mean, people look at the County League and say, oh, it's kind of a secondary competition, but I was interested the way that you answered it there and said, look, we were going to avoid relegation, but we got a couple of runs or games under our belts and things were good. How important is that competition?
Well, it depends on, I suppose, only it depends on what way you approach it, right? So some clubs might be down a few players for the start of the year, so they mightn't train earlier on in the year, you know. It might depend on how late they finished their season before. That might depend, you know, that might affect how they approach the following season's County League. But it is a great competition. It is enjoyable to play games every 2 weeks in it, you know. And it does afford you, what is it, 11 games? It does afford you chances to work on stuff throughout the year. Now, it does, I suppose, with 11 County League games and your championship, it does mean that the league or the year is probably a bit long. Mm-hmm. And I know, look, it's a debate for another time. I see a lot of people talking about the county championship and the divisional boards, and I wouldn't see any reason to be going too radical in changes. I mean, the divisions have stood to us fairly well now in the county for a very long, long time. I wouldn't be changing too much of that. The only thing where I would see, this is my own personal view, and I think I read Paddy Clifford mention it, I think it's kind of hard, and there doesn't seem to be an ambition amongst players to go from a group stage, which are club championships, straight into a group stage into the county championship. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's an area that can be looked at. The club championships has become an animal in its own right. I mean, the month of August there's fantastic games on every weekend in Kerry, you know. And I'm just not sure that that fellas, you know, after a tough club campaign, to go straight into a group stage of a county championship again. Mm-hmm. I think it's a tall ask for a lot of players, especially the clubs, the senior clubs, to go from one straight into the other, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it's a great debate to have, and one we'll probably have for another day, but there's no debate about who the junior county champions are anyway for this year. It's Renard, and congratulations, Darcy. Keep up the good work behind, and Brian, thanks for joining us this evening. And sure, you never know, sure, this time next year we might book you in for maybe the Premier Junior slot, maybe. You never know, all going well. And listen, the very best. Look, great work going on there. And that, of course, is Brian O'Sullivan, the manager of Renard, and Darcy O'Connell, the vice chair of Renard down there in South Kerry. As I said, they are the 2023 Kerry Petroleum Junior Championship winners, and they had a fine win over Tarbert, and it was nice as well to hear Darcy say that. I suppose it on the day it didn't reflect Tarbert as well. We have a lot of listeners up in Tarbert, and we played Tarbert ourselves a few times. Very tough team, but I suppose it's like everything, you need a bit of luck on the day. But we'll take a quick break.
Breaking down the weekend sporting action, this is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, keep those answers coming in there to see, can you win Chasing Sam Maguire, the All-Ireland story from 1928 to 1977? And of course, the question is, and of course, Donald Barry's trying to trick as many of you as he can, who picked up Sam Maguire in 1975? Who picked up Sam Maguire in 1975? And to give you a clue, one man couldn't pick it up at all because he was somewhere else. And that might link to my next guest, because he obviously knows his Kinmare football, I would hope. And he is one of 50, I suppose, leading J stars, and they're heading to Africa this month as part of an initiative to plant 1 million trees and raise awareness of the impact that climate change is having on some of the world's most vulnerable people. And delighted to be joined by Kerry hurler and Kinmare hurler as well, Finan O'Sullivan. Finan, it sounds like a fierce, exciting trip. How did it come about? And how are you preparing for it, maybe?
I don't know how it's going. Preparing, it was something that kind of came very quick at me, to be honest. It was only about kind of 5 weeks ago I got the call, was I interested in going? Because, like every county at the moment, there was championships and there was people that agreed to go, and then suddenly they were getting the finals and they couldn't go. So it came around very, very fast. I'm the only fella going from Kerry at the moment. Ashley Desmond is also travelling on the trip as well.
Kerry is former Kerry leader. What's the trip? I mean, when people say going to Africa planting trees, I mean, it's to raise awareness for, I suppose, for the impact of climate change. It's something that we don't really talk about in the GAA whole pile. We talk about changing every sort of structure, but it's a real serious issue.
It is, yeah, and to be honest, it's all down to one man, Alan Kearns from Galway. I'm sure anyone that knows him will know Alan. He was a dual star with Galway for years. but it's like single-handedly it's his project. Like he set up the relationship with Self Help Africa. He's been out to Africa several times, so this year is the second year of this Warriors for Humanity. It's kind of what we're called, the group of us. But last year was the first year of it, where they went out and they planted a million trees in the 9 or 10 days, and like they also showed off the sport. Like they played a mixed hurling game and they played a mixed football game. Like you have footballers, hurlers, camogie players, everyone going out to this. Like, so we were also showing off the good Irish sport as well. But at the end of the day, we were really just raising awareness for stuff we don't really know about here and we don't have problems with here.
Mm-hmm. And it's good to see it firsthand. I mean, obviously you can bring it home, and next time you would be very informed about actually the topic. How can we support you? I mean, do we run down and get trees for you and say carry them off over yourself, or what do you need help with?
No, I don't think I'd be allowed a few trees in the carry on now going to Kenya.
Could you imagine?
I can imagine Ryanair wouldn't allow that anyway. But no, there's links there now at the moment. There's two, three different ways you can support it. Like one of the new ways now this year, and it's a great initiative, was McKeever there that make the gear there. I think they make like Armaz jerseys and things, but they're like a smaller O'Neill's. They've brought out three different jerseys, for example, and the jerseys, they're very nice jerseys. They're three different colours, and they have all the logos on it for the trip or whatever. And they're only €45 a jersey, but €20 of that 45 goes straight to Self Help Africa, to buying trees and other supplies for the people in where we're going, is Kenya, but that's all over Africa is where they work. And then there's just straight I donate pages for all the different players. There are links. There's a link on my Instagram, for example, and same with Ashton. She's a link on her page, and all the rest of the players. I did say I was the only carry man going, but that's actually a lie, because Pat Spillane Jr. is actually also on the trip. He's travelling through Sligo, Jay, but I suppose we can have the same as the Kerrymen too, don't we?
You don't think Kerrymen are from Timpano, is it?
Well, yeah, it's rare enough he's down here, so it is.
You'll be sitting on the same plane here, hopefully. Come here, I mean, it's a huge thing to be involved with, but obviously when you go over, I mean, you were talking about 50 other leading stars. I mean, you must be excited as well, maybe to kind of say, God, you know, I'm going to move in that little circle as well and meet different people, and obviously you'll have plenty of Jay to chat about.
Absolutely, like as anyone I was talking about going, like they said, you surely have plenty to chat about and plenty in common, like considering we all spend 8-9 months of the year doing the exact same thing. So there should be no shortage of conversation out there. And like you said, yeah, like I'll be meeting Dublin footballers, Limerick hurlers, Mayo footballers, Kilkenny camogie players, there's everyone on the trip, like, you know. It's a fantastic opportunity, and I jumped at the chance when I got the phone call about it. But no, very, very excited about it now, to be fair. It's only a couple of days away now. We're actually heading on Friday night, so it's only around the corner.
You have everything ready and packed. Look, we have another minute before we finish up. A quick word on Cross's fantastic win. I mean, it's what the club, I suppose, hurling in Kerry needs. I mean, it's a massive win up to Ferrybank, win the quarterfinal, and now home to Cork champions in a semi-final. I mean, that's the stuff of dreams for some of your colleagues and friends on the Cross's team.
Absolutely. I was only talking to two or three of them there now last night. I was talking to Jordan there, a few quick texts about it. Like, so they're over the moon, like, and the fact that they're home now as well for the semi-final, I think they're playing above Mount Cole, like, that's a great opportunity. Like, they have nothing to lose bringing him there. Like, I'm sure, like, all the North Kerry clubs, everyone will be finding their way to Mount Cole to watch it and to support them. Like, so it'd be great to see him go another step. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And of course, like, The hurling fraternity, I mean, while you're all different clubs and the whole lot, I mean, I presume it's a big united family when the Kerry flag is flown. But the merit of the win and the importance of the win, even to kind of hold your head up high, it was an incredible win.
And in fact, absolutely. Like, I wasn't at the game, but we got to watch it. The famous Buff Egan had it up on his social media for. We were watching through him, and like they bossed the game from the start. Like, they never looked like they were going to lose the game, which was great to see a Kerry team doing, going out against Waterford champions, like a fine hurling county, like, and just lead it from the start. Like, you know, it was great showing by them. Like, Jordan Conway was fine, Shane Nolan looked very sharp, and all the Kerry boys stood up. New Rory Mahoney there, like, new kid in the block, really. Like, they were really showing themselves well, like.
Yeah, it's great to see it. Listen, you're off on Friday, the very best of luck. When you come back, you might catch up again. Sure, you might tell us about how the tree planting went, and we might tell the people the second part of the story. And of course, if you want to support them, you go on to McKeever's there. Like I said, the jersey is €45, 20 straight to the charity, and the I Donate page as well, and Instagram as well. Listen, Fionnán, the very best of luck to you, and get back nice and safe. And of course, you can talk to Pat Spillane Jr. about is it the Kinmare District Cup or something that you might play down there sometimes.
We'll find out something to talk about anyway.
Absolutely. Sure, you never know. She might have convinced him to come on. You never know. he might have a chat with us. That, of course, is Fionnán O'Sullivan from Kinmare. Thanks very much, Fionnán, for joining us. Chasing Sam Maguire. A lot of Kinmare people chase Sam Maguire around the place. The All-Ireland Football Championship story, 1928-1977. After the news at 7 o'clock, we will be talking to both the men, Dermot Riley and Cullum Keyes, who wrote the book. And, of course, there's loads of answers coming in. And Ivan wants way more answers coming in, because, you know, there's no point counting 600 answers when we're giving out a book worth €35. Who picked up the cup? And Fionnán, unknowns to himself, might have given away a bit of a clue in his conversation with us. And we will do all that and talk to those guys after the news at 7.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Now, Chasing Sam Maguire. It's a book that you will certainly have seen in your local bookshop. I mean, it's big enough, and it's a huge book, actually, to be fair to it. And certainly come up to Christmas. And I suppose for curiosity's sake alone, and I know loads of Terrace Talk listeners are at least curious about things, you'll be taking a peek at it, and you'll be looking at a lovely cover, of course, featuring Mick O'Connell. And you will take a quick flick through the pages, and it will draw you into, I suppose, in many ways a rich world of nostalgia, because it certainly brought nostalgic views back to me anyway, of great names and great teams, many of them of Kerry, of course, but also great names and teams that, I suppose, in many ways dashed Kerry dreams of winning All-Ireland as well. And delighted that the two men responsible for such an epic workload join us on the line now, Dermot Riley and Cullum Keyes. A very special Kerry Cade meal of fault to both of you, first of all.
Thank you.
No bother. Dermot, I'll start with you, because your book is centre left. You're number 8 midfield there on the book, and Cullum is number 9, so we'll start with 8. Dermot, I'm presuming you didn't wake up one night and say, for a bit of a laugh, let's put this massive collection of work together as some sort of punishment for yourself, because it strikes me as a book that it took a while to do, and it's kind of a painstaking amount of time as well, because I know about putting programmes together in bits and pieces and how difficult it is to get one page together, never mind the size of the book. What was the genesis of this journey?
It probably goes back most of my life, growing up in a GAA community in County Kildare. Always something I had an interest in, and listening to the old stories of players of yesteryear and all of that good stuff. So the thought struck me as I was coming towards the end of my official working life that it might be a good idea to have a deep search to see what information could we get in relation to the individuals who played, lined out, whether as players or subs, on All-Ireland Day. We're all familiar with, you know, looking at old newspapers or whatever, and you'll see the name D. Barry, but nobody knew if that was David, Dan, Dermot, and certainly nobody knew what his club was. So began to tip around with names, clubs, and all the rest of it, and Cullum and I would have been friends for a long time. So I put the question to him one day, how long would it take us to assemble and just put together, and this was no concept of a book at the time, just put together the name of everybody who had the honour of representing their county on All-Ireland Day, and let's see if they have a nickname, and let's see what all their clubs were. And quick as a flash, Cullum said that could take us 6 months. I can tell you that this
he's an optimist, is he?
It started more than 10 years ago. I'm afraid to check the precise dates, but it's back there somewhere. Yeah. But let Cullum take it from there.
Dear God, 6 months, fair play to him. He must write columns that quickly, so as well. Come here, before I move on to Cullum, I mean, Dermot, I have to say, I love the style of the book. For me, I love the yearly kind of breakdown, and you just give enough about the games to keep you kind of interested, and you're not kind of, I suppose, overwhelmed by the whole fact of how the game turned or whatever. But the one thing that I really love, and this has got nothing to do with you at all, but I love the early facts and the kind of milestones that kind of tie in with what was happening at the time. And let's start with 1928, because obviously you mentioned Kildare, and I love the fact that obviously Kildare won the All-Ireland, but I love the fact that you say it's the same year as Mickey Mouse appeared on the thing. They're in no way connected, are they?
Maybe they are nowadays, or some people would say they are nowadays, but back in 1928 Kildare was a long way from Mickey Mouse in the world of Gaelic football. And, you know, all of those snippets and interesting facts, again, they weren't part of the original design. But if you spend hours and hours and hours poring over old newspapers and reports, your eye is going to be immediately attracted to the front page headline, the back page headline. And all of these interesting facts came out. So Colm and I decided, well, let's weave this into a little bit of a wider story.
Mm-hmm. Colm, I suppose Donal and Kerry, look, we talk about Mick O'Dwyer and the great four in a row, and I suppose of a certain age, we remember that and we lived through it and all that kind of stuff. But there was a great Kerry team of 1929, 30, 31 and 32. What do we know of that team? And they obviously take a good part of the early part of the book, I'd imagine, because they obviously won four in a row, and they got caught, I suppose, for the fifth one there. We'll mention that character there in a second. But I mean, there was a lot of history involved in that time, particularly 29 to 32.
There is, and when you look at and you mentioned the final miscellany and the various facts, but in the, Donald, when you look at the final miscellany in 1928, and we have provided the roll of honour at the end of 1928, and at the top were Dublin with 14, Kerry were second with 7. Wexford obviously had a magnificent team in the earlier part of the century. They were on 5. So Dublin had twice as many All-Ireland titles as Kerry had. But that four in a row team really set Kerry football on a pathway to dominate the game over the 50 years, and indeed, I suppose you could say, the next 60 years, and they overtook Dublin comfortably and dominated them to such an extent. So that team effectively really laid the foundations, I would feel, from researching this, I would feel that they laid the foundations for what was to come and for Kerry to so often come back in. And you mentioned at the outset when you were introducing us that the various teams that dashed Kerry's hopes. But that's the great thing about Kerry, is that they always respond, no matter who or what is thrown at them. They've always found a way, right up to 2022 when they won their last one. So that Kerry team really set Kerry football on a path with that four in a row and overtook. They had a great rivalry, of course, with Kildare in those years. So they really overtook and laid those foundations.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the snippets I picked out of the book that I was absolutely hilarious was in 1929, the Kerrymen wrote about that Kerry team after they defeated, I think it was Clare in the Munster final or something. They said, their great run was coming to an end despite beating Clare 114-1-2 in the Munster final. So obviously the Kerry men got it, we'll say, a little bit wrong on that one thing. They went on to win four in a row.
In 1975 there was something similar. I think it was John Barry and the Kerry men declared that there was no All-Ireland title in this team early on as well. So there was various pronouncements like that through the years, where local papers, we went to local papers for a lot of this, and some of them were really, really strong coverage in those years, and the Kerryman was one of those. But quite often the local, they were bold in their declaration about how a team was going, and were never shy, if the team wasn't going well, about putting that out there too. There was certainly no cosy relationship in those years, and they said it as they saw it, and quite often declared at the outset of a season a team had no chance. That actually features quite regularly in this book.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course the media, you're right in saying it there, because obviously it was the only go-to place, in the sense that you weren't on Facebook giving out about the selection of the team or Twitter and the whole lot, and it was your newspaper on the week. And I love another snippet there from 1939. I don't know, the final or semi-final, I think it was the final. Johnny Reardon, the Kerry goalkeeper, did not touch the ball in the 1930 final versus Monaghan. They won 3-11 to 2 points. Can you imagine playing in a whole All-Ireland final these days, being a goalkeeper and not touching a ball? Come here, back to bad memories, I suppose, and I suppose the earliest bad memory most Kerry people will have reading this book, anyway, if they go on at all, Dermot, is a guy called Vincent McGovern of Cavan. We all know Seamus Darby of his time, and obviously he's very, very late goal, but late goal seemed to be a thing that affected Kerry, and of course he was a Cavan guy. He scored a late goal in the 1933 semi-final, and it does kind of bring that Cavan team on board, because growing up in Kerry, I suppose we're all heavily influenced by our uncles and our grandfathers and the whole lot, but Kevin and Roscommon were two names that kind of always came up around that time as great teams. And I suppose I'd be growing up in the 1990s, and God, I didn't think Kevin and Roscommon played football at all, but I mean they were good and they were strong and they were leaders back in those days.
Well, that was Cavan's breakthrough year, 1933, and as you rightly say, Vincent McGovern was the man who broke the deadlock against Kerry. But Cavan's record at the time, over the following 20 years, Kerry won 5 All-Irelands. So did Cavan. Cavan appeared in 11 of the 20 All-Irelands from 1933. Like, it was just amazing how successful and how strong. And, you know, people looking back now, clearly Cavan have great tradition, but not everybody would appreciate that, you know, they were so very much at the top of the pile. And similarly for Roscommon, because they came through in the early 40s after having had a very strong minor team. And from 43, 44, 46, they were in the All-Ireland finals. And again, a tremendous, a bit like Kerry in the 70s, they just had a golden age of footballers and dominated everything for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Column about Roscommon, and of course I'm looking at the book now, one of the things that jumped out about 1946, there's a great one there by Roscommon where they announced their daily regime in preparation for the 1946 final. And of course I suppose you know the way teams will hardly announce anything these days, and you're lucky to meet players even on media nights, and they're not going to say how much. But anyway, to our listeners, anyway, 8:30 it was time to rise, 9:30 it was breakfast, 10:30 they went for a walk, 12:45 they got a bit of sponging and toweling, at 1:30 they went for dinner, at 3:30 they went off to St. Colman's Park for limbering, free exercises, hurdling, sprinting, place kicking, which I thought was kind of cool, and general tactics, so obviously tactics were a thing there as well. 5:30 it was time for the bats and attention to injuries, so obviously the modern physio was hanging around as well. Then they had tea at 6:30, they had another short walk at 8:00, they had supper at 9:45, and they retired, I presume, to bed at 10:30. Were teams getting slightly professional at this stage, or were they even in their own terms kind of getting to terms with being a small bit professional in just setting themselves up, Colm, do you think?
Very much so, and there was almost a creeping professionalism, Donal, in that era, and obviously that's 1946. But by 1953, the GAA had banned collective training in the weeks before an All-Ireland final. Quite often a team would come together for 2 weeks before an All-Ireland final, and the 1952 All-Ireland final, Meath and Cavan contested Battlin for the 2 weeks before that. Meath were training in a place called Bruin Mee in Gibbstown, and up the road in Virginia, Cavan were training there, which was no more than 15-20 miles, so they were quite close to where each were training. But Kerry were one county that would have benefited strongly from the collective training for those 2 weeks, in that they would have got their players back from Cork and from Dublin and perhaps even Galway. So, you know, Kerry obviously had a lot of players up the country involved in army and involved in, there were guards, they moved around, and they would get those players back for those 2 weeks, and it was seen as critical to their preparations, and indeed all the teams. But 1953, that was banned by the GAA, and for the 54 All-Ireland final, there was a sense that Kerry missed that, even though they were favourites against Meath in 1954, there was a sense that Kerry missed out on those 2 weeks and maybe weren't as well prepared as they had been for previous All-Ireland finals, and that it would have cost them against that Meath team. So yes, there was a sense that there was too much professionalism coming into the game, which, when you think of it now in a modern context, is really hard to fathom. But at that time, yes, a lot of collective training, just in the build-up to All-Ireland finals more so.
Yeah, absolutely. In the 53 team, of course, it was Sean Murphy and Dermot Hennepin. Midfield and Dermot Hennepin's son, obviously, went on to win as well for Kerry. And of course, that Dermot Hennepin's grandson is now playing with, I think it's with Nace, is it, above in Kildare?
That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that link went all the way through. Bring us up to 1955, Dermot, because, look, obviously, we're meant to talk about the Dubs. We haven't beaten the Dubs in a while. But we did 1955, and was it kind of the beginning of, dare I say, the Kerry Colchis against the Dublin Townies?
Well, it's always held out as such. You know, the subsequent record would show that there were limited enough in terms of the regularity with which Dublin and Kerry met. But that was a seriously big year, because Dublin had come on the scene. They had perfected their machine-like forward division with Kevin Heffernan orchestrating everything. Meath, as Colm said a second ago, were All-Ireland champions in 1954, and when they were beaten by Dublin in the Leinster final, they were hockeyed off the pitch by about 20 points, and Dublin got 6 goals. They were just unstoppable. And Mick Dunn of the Irish Press, then a young journalist, said nothing short of a miracle will prevent Dublin from winning the All-Ireland. And of course, the miracle came in the form of Kerry and Heffernan, the fantastic player that he was and all the rest of it. There was a fellow called Ned Roach playing for Kerry, and he put the kibosh on the brilliant Heffo that day. And, you know, the record will show that Kerry won by 3 points, 12 points to 1-6. But the reality is that Kerry suffocated him throughout the field with a wonderful victory, with Johnny Cullity, by the way, as a teenager, playing corner forward that day. But that was the start, you know, and for many years afterwards, any time that Kevin Heffernan would give one of these admittedly fairly rare interviews, he would always go back to that and reference the fact that it was the biggest disappointment of his life to lose that day to Kerry. So very much the watershed and a stunning victory for Kerry against all the odds.
Absolutely. Will you stay online with me for a quick 2 minutes, because I have another 7 or 8 minutes and I want to kind of gather way through, but I have to tick a box here for you, because when you mentioned Ned Roach, we have a lot of people that ring in from Knocknagoshal night and day. I mean, they'll be delighted to know that. And that's the one thing about the book as well, is that it has all the clubs, and something that's quite interesting, Jerm Shea obviously played St. Mary's with Carstabeen, but he also played with Aaron's Hope in Dublin and UCD and the whole lot. And you might explain that to me just after this quick commercial break.
Breaking down the weekend sporting action, this is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, Dermot Riley and Colm Keyes on the phone with me, and we're talking about chasing Sam Maguire. And of course, we are giving a book away this evening. And of course, like I said, we weren't going to give listeners an easy question, obviously, because obviously you can answer easy questions. 1975, who picked up Sam Maguire for Kerry? And would you believe it, we have an awful lot of me caught out, but the question is, who picked up Sam Maguire for Kerry? And obviously one of the guys couldn't pick up because he was somewhere else out of the way, and we might talk about that. Dermot, another team that caused us hardship, Down. How good were Down?
Down were a fantastic team and an innovative team. They arrived in the late 50s, won their first Ulster Championship in 1959. But it wasn't just that they arrived and had a talented group of players. They certainly did have that. But there was a man called Maurice Hayes, was chairman of the county board and general organiser in Down. And he sat down in 1957 and he drew up a plan and he said, this is what we're going to do with Down football. And we're going to win an All-Ireland. Success will be measured by whether we win an All-Ireland within the next 5 years. And they won 2 All-Irelands within that 5-year period. Now, they were blessed, as you said there at the start. You have Mick O'Connell on the front cover of our book, but right behind him jumping for the ball is Sean O'Neill. But then Sean O'Neill, Paddy Doherty, Jim McCartan, Dan McCartan, a tremendous array of footballers. But the key there was the planning from the outset, nurturing the players, and then they developed a certain style of play which moved away from what at that time might have been the traditional catch and kick, which served Kerry very, very well. Nobody was able to improvise better than Kerry when everything changed, but down were quick and fast. There was a sort of a soccer type dimension to the way they played, and you know, the fact that they won in 60 and 61 and won handsomely, and it wasn't just a one-off. They were able to come back and win the All-Ireland again in 68, again with a very strong team, and again with, unfortunately, Kerry as their victims.
Mm-hmm, the victims who were. It's interesting you mentioned Maurice Hayes, because I forgot about him, because a lot of people would probably associate him later in life as, was he involved in the Northern Ireland peace process or something? He used to always be on kind of television and radio and commentary on it.
A senator and, you know, a sensible voice all round, but he was very, along with a man called Barney Carr, he was very much at the centre of Down's arrival on the scene, very much so. And of course, Down have won 5 All-Irelands, not to be sneezed at for any county, beginning in 1960.
Yeah, absolutely. Cullum, 1975, obviously it's the question we're asking about who got the cup. Obviously, if life was right, one man would have lifted it, but it launched a career maybe of another man. The 75, obviously the book ends in 77. It's like one of those great films that you spend 4 hours watching, and before you get to the next bit, you say, my God, they're not going to reach the great years for the rest of us. But that 75, 76, 77, was it evident then to the people that were following that something special was going to happen?
Well, probably in 1974, Dublin came in and won that All-Ireland title. And they hadn't won an All-Ireland title for 12 years before that. For 11 years before that. And obviously, in Dublin terms, that was a famine. And Dublin really plummeted to low enough depths. There's a Heffernan's first game was against Kilkenny in late 1973. And when they arrived in Nolan Park, there was a huge crowd there, lots of traffic, lots of cars parked around. So they probably thought there's a crowd here to see us. But as it happened, there was a minor hurling match on before us, and when that game was over, the crowd deserted, and there was only barely 100 or 200 people in to watch Heffernan's first game, one of his first games for Kilkenny. So that's how low, when you think of the travelling circus that is Dublin now, and that's how low it was in late 1973. And things had become quite fractious in Dublin for the years beforehand, and they had really plumbed to a low depth, and that they used to play in a Leinster preliminary round. 3 or 4 teams would go into a preliminary round in the early 70s, and Dublin would be in that and routinely beaten as well. But Heffernan transformed them. He made them obviously one of the fittest and biggest and most physical teams to play the game, and they built on what Down did in the 1960s, and there was teamwork and there was interplay that, you know, deviating from the traditional catch and kick even more. And obviously then, in 1975, there was a big response from Mick O'Dwyer's Kerry, introducing so many of the All-Ireland winning under-21 players that he had that had been there beforehand. But even at that, nobody saw 1975 coming. And I mentioned at the outset John Barry in the Kerryman, and he concluded after a league quarter-final. They lost to Meath in March, Kerry, that year. They lost by 5 points. And the headline was pretty damning of Kerry and the Kerryman. It was quite clear, utter disaster is what it pointed to. But by the end of the season, Kerry were, Sam Maguire had Sam Maguire again and were champions, and of course set off on that great run. So things could change very, very quickly for a team. They did with Dublin in 74, and they did with Kerry in 75. And of course that spawned that great rivalry, and the crowds really got behind Dublin, and you could see the crowd, even though it was in the television era, the crowds were really getting behind the team and getting into Croke Park, and it colourised Gaelic football almost to a degree that it really brought it into the modern era.
Darren, one question I was dying to ask you, my producer is running out of time, so I'm going to ask you quickly, how excited were your Kildare when we sent Mikko up to you?
We were very excited and very upset when he left us, and then he came back again. and very upset when. But Mick always was terrific, and you know, I would have known a lot of the lads who played for Mick and were selectors with him and all the rest of it, and he was as much a god in Kildare as he was in Kerry. A fantastic man, a great motivator above all else. Fantastic motivator. People to believe in themselves.
I had Pat McCarthy, and Pat McCarthy doesn't give a lot of interviews on the show last year, the former Kerry midfielder, and of course he was a selector with him as well, and
that's true.
We were talking about the All-Ireland that got away, basically, and I remember him saying to me, if we'd done it all over again, basically, Don, he says to me, we'd put the Kildare team into the, on a bus and head to the Aran Islands, because he kind of felt that the media access was so close for Dublin that they could just drive down and rock into the field and the whole lot, whereas he felt the Galway had the advantage because it was so far away and all that. And that leads me on to Cullum nicely to finish it up. The access to players then as opposed to now, it's nearly black and white now, Cullum, is it?
Absolutely is, Donald. I mean, it's probably at its lowest point ever. The All-Ireland hurling semi-finals this year, for the hurling semi-finals, there was no press, no media engagement. I don't believe there was any for the football, although I stand to be corrected. As it happens, one of the best, it would be one of the best managers would be Jack O'Connor, for access. He holds regular press briefings down there in Kerry, obviously, but they are few and far between, and the engagement is probably at its lowest level ever. I would note a colleague of mine, Aidan Fitzmaurice, tweeted yesterday, commending Bohemians and St. Pat's for the access and information they provided ahead of yesterday's FAI Cup final, which was close to a sellout. The official attendance was 43,000 plus, but they've also since many more were still there. It was close to a sellout. That just shows you the value. Soccer earnestly tries to sell itself well and put itself out there and tries to draw the crowd, and yesterday it had its biggest success. There was a level of complacency, obviously, maybe not centrally, but a level of complacency elsewhere, that the crowds will come to watch the games, and the games are strong enough to carry the sport on its own. But I think without the colour and without the characters and without the knowledge of those who are involved and a little bit of insight into how they go about their business too, sells the game even more. And right now, that's not there. Mm-hmm. Public, by and large, don't really know. They support them on a Saturday and a Sunday, but they don't really know a whole lot more about them. And obviously, the games come thick and fast now, and there's no more than, for the most part of it, only 2 weeks between a game now, and these are amateurs, so therefore time to give over time for interviews or for, you know, the disclosure of any information or anything like that is limited, that's for sure. But it suits teams just to keep a very low profile, and the game suffers, by and large the game suffers, and I feel it'll continue to suffer as long as that is there.
Yeah, absolutely. Fine words. I totally agree with him as well. It is difficult. And it's funny because there is an appetite from the general public to know your players more. They look back and I suppose they have the stories of the Bombers and the Egans and Jack O'Shea and all the stories that go with them in time. And the only fear I would have is that in when the next book, we'll say not chapter 2 but maybe chapter 3, if you're around to write the one in, starting in, I know, will be 2028, maybe, whatever it is, that you won't have the stories to go with, and you won't have the snippets, and depending on the newspapers, and they'll be kind of sterile, because a lot of these things are fairly sterile at the moment when you are interviewing the players through no fault of their own. But something that isn't sterile, guys, is chasing Sam Maguire, the All-Ireland Football Championship. Thanks very much for taking time out this evening, Dermot and Cullum. It's fantastic to have you on the show. It was great to get the access. As I said, it's a fantastic book. We have one to give away tonight. We have one to give away for our Christmas show as well, which is an awful big night. And in the meantime, I wish you the very, very best of luck with it. And if you're ever down in Kerry, Dermot, sure, we might give you an old spin around the ring of Kerry. Cullum is down here loads of times. He's a very serious operator all the time. The very best of luck, guys, and very best of luck with your book. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. From the sidelines to the stand. Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, the Kerry Recreation Sports Partnership, along with the Department of Health and Leisure at the MTU, are holding their, I suppose, their next event in the Women in Sports series. And we did feature this kind of, I think it was back in February or March, they were doing their first one. But this is the second event on it, and it's going to focus on strength and conditioning considerations for young female athletes. And joining me on the line is Eimear Foley of MTU. Eimear, I feel like I should say Tralee IT, but I won't, okay? It keeps changing on me, and of course you're there in the Department of Health. This is a big gig, and this is a very important one, and it's great that you're focusing in specifically to women in sport.
Hi Donal, thanks for having me on. I've just stepped out of basketball training here, so I'm slightly out of breath.
Are you Tralee Magic?
No, we're Tralee Tigers, the women.
I'm actually training
myself for a change.
Good stuff.
But thanks a million for having me on. And yes, you're right. We're MTU, and we're MTU Kerry Campus. But we were formerly IT Tralee. Delighted that this is our second event. So it's kind of following on from the one we had in March that focused on more just kind of looking at, I suppose, just some of the issues that occur trying to keep teenage girls in sports. So this is what the delegates that attended the first night wanted to see a little bit more of, was actually that strength and conditioning focus, and, you know, some of the considerations, particularly for the kind of teenage girls and what they should be thinking about.
Absolutely. And of course, you've lined up, I suppose, a good midfield partnership in Niamh O'Sullivan and Fionn Fitzgerald, and obviously people will know through the football Fionn's ability, but Niamh O'Sullivan as well, another physical therapist and an international athlete as well in her time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my own colleague is Fionn, and has done, you know, his own career in terms of football, but has also, he's finishing his PhD in kind of young adolescent training and age and growth and maturity. So he's going to bring a real wealth of information on that side, and he has some kind of newer findings and research on girls and how it's a little bit different in terms of his findings and the training recommendations. And then Niamh, you know, a good friend of mine, Niamh has been running for many years and a physical therapist herself, but has also been coaching young Irish girls under 20s and under 23s in athletics and running. So she has just so much experience on this. So we just felt that the two were going to bring you know, just a lovely balance to them and share lots of knowledge with the speaker with people attending.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you couldn't get a better MC than somebody who totally knows about strength and condition. That, of course, is the former Ireland rugby captain Ciara Griffin.
Yeah, so Ciara emceed our last event, and actually Ciara was just superb at kind of tying it all together and just really feeding off what the people were asking and the questions that were actually coming from the audience, and being able to just, you know, drive the conversation and you know, get more of the answers. So we brought Ciara back to do the MC. What's nice about this one as well, you know, this is an event not to be missed, really. I know it's a Friday evening and it's late, but there are going to be refreshments there if you're coming from work or wherever you're coming from. But there is a little bit of practical as well. So along with, you know, the kind of keynote, I suppose, the presentations at the start, we're going to take a little tour in the Kerry Sports Academy. And they're going to, people who come along are going to get just a small snapshot of kind of three little practical areas. One area will be functional strength, and particularly looking at just a few very simple hip and glute type exercises that you can do with your girls. And then Fiona's going to take through a little bit on dynamic warm-ups and movement patterns, and then Niamh is going to focus on kind of lower leg strengthening exercises and the knee in particular, which, you know, we all know, you know, can be a source of, you know, maybe injuries, and just, you know, just operating in any kind of a sporting or athletic environment, you need a good solid base under you. So that's going to be a real, you know, nugget of information for people to take home with them.
Yeah, and who's it kind of aimed at? Is it aimed at me who wants to know a bit more, or is it kind of maybe a coach or maybe teachers?
It's aimed at whoever wants to come, and it's certainly not just aimed, I know it's called the Women in Sports Series, it's not just aimed at female coaches or females involved in this. This is aimed at anybody who is involved with coaching or maybe teaching that kind of adolescent female population. So you might, you know, you might be in the PE teaching or other kind of teaching, maybe with teams. You could be coaching, or just maybe someone that has a genuine interest in the area. You might even be, you know, a teenager yourself, and you just really, really want to come to this. So everybody is welcome. You know, we're taking registrations. It is filling up fast, so you'd want to get in there. And the registration link is up on most of the social media platforms. If you look at the Kerry Recreation and Sports Partnership, along with our own MTU Health and Leisure page. But if you look at Eventbrite, you'll find the registration for this Friday night, the 17th, for the event. It is €10, but as I said, you do get some nice refreshments.
Well, anyway, €10 is cheap to listen to Fionn Fitzgerald and Eva O'Sullivan and give all the great advice. And I like the way that you're going to be making them work for it as well, with their few exercises as well.
And don't worry, Donal, if people, like, if you don't have to participate, I mean, you can just observe those practicals. We do have some of our students are coming in to give a hand in demos and that. So don't worry, you know, you can do as little or as much as you want. And then some of the questions that are already coming in, just to whet your appetite, you know, people really want to know about what age should girls be starting strength and conditioning, or what kind of quantities or loads, any considerations in terms of, you know, that hormonal menstrual cycle, injury prevention, you know, what are the kinds of trainings they should be doing? So they'll all be, you know, referred to on the night.
Fair play. Well, listen, you get back into your basketball training now.
I'll try and get another 10 minutes anyway.
Good stuff. Listen, Eimear, thanks. Great to chat as always. And you know what? We might actually maybe follow up on that as well, maybe in a couple of weeks, and see how it went, and maybe see what some of the learnings were as well, so we could share them to listeners if they miss out. And who knows? I mean, it's educated. Believe it or not, my next guest is a young champion athlete, and she is heading to Armenia as a junior boxer, hoping she's wearing the Irish singlet, of course, Mary McDonough from Tralee, and I'm sure you have to do a small bit of strength and conditioning to get there as well. But we'll chat after the break. Thanks, Eimear.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home. Breaking down the weekend sporting action, this is Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now my next guest, Mary McDonough from Tralee, is going to represent Ireland at the World Junior Boxing Championships in Armenia at the end of the month, which is quite exciting, to be fair about it. And of course, she's part of the elite women's team, and they were sending a boys team as well to it. And I suppose if luck would look, John Coffey, who's joining us, we would have had a second one, but unfortunately we've had an injury with Jamesy.
Yes, Jamesy received a concussion injury a couple of weeks ago in international, so unfortunately he's going to miss out on his opportunity to the Worlds. We're very disappointed for Jamesy, but look, it is what it is. He gets his break comes a little sooner than expected.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And of course, it's part of the whole sport and a lot of it. But flying fit is Mary McDonough anyway, 70 kg. Mary, are you excited to be heading to Armenia?
Yeah, I'm delighted. You're, to be picked.
Fair play. And of course, to get picked, I mean, you're obviously national champion.
Yeah.
You're quite modest. How many national titles have you?
5 Irish titles.
Yeah, so you're winning them for fun really at this stage, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's great though to get to step up and wear the Irish singlet and head away over, but it's not your first time competing for Ireland, is it?
No, this will be my second.
Yeah, and how did you get on the first time?
I went over to the Europeans in Italy and I got a semi-final. I was boxing
girl from the Ukraine, wasn't it?
No, she was girl
from
the
Turkey.
Final.
Oh,
I
yes.
From Turkey first, and I bet her 5-0. And then I was in a final then against the Ukrainian, but unfortunately I didn't get the decision.
Yeah. That makes you, though, a European silver medalist.
Yeah.
Absolutely. At what age?
16.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something not to be too sniffed about. Also joining us, of course, is Jennifer O'Sullivan, of course. It's the Slieve Lucre Boxing Club. It seems to be a great story, but obviously you share it with the Kerry. It's a Kerry story as well. But
yes.
From a club perspective, to have two that were getting to the line, unfortunately one is down injured, but that must be amazing.
It is. I suppose the club is going now 17 years. And
is it that long?
Yeah, it Whoa. Is. Yeah. And I suppose it feels that we hit a different milestone every year, which is fantastic. And I suppose that's kind of the way it's supposed to go. Sorry. So, like, we had two European champions, which was a massive milestone for us, and now two to be representing in the Worlds, and again, that's another milestone. But, like, I suppose it's always, of course, it is the club and it is the coaches, but it's the boxers that are the talent within it, and we've been very lucky, I suppose, in that. It just keeps coming, and it's great. And look, like any club, you can be up and you can be down. And, you know, at the moment, we seem to be up, which is fantastic. But, you know, and so has other clubs in Kerry as well. So we're delighted with it.
Mm-hmm. Mary, tell the listeners the work that goes in, first of all, to get to Irish Championship and win a national championship. But the most times you train and how hard it is and the boxing and the whole lot.
Well, I train twice a day. I get up every morning at 6:30 and I go to the gym for 2 hours. And then I go to the boxing club then every evening for 7:00 and I do my training 2 hours. And I do sparring as well. I spar 3-4 rounds a night. Then I do go up to high performance training every weekend with the high performance coaches. So.
And what's the high performance like? I presume, like, when you go up there, you have different programs to follow and all that, and different coaches doing different training with you and all that. It's a bit different to being at the local, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it is hard work.
Yeah, and of course you have to travel up. When you say travel up, where's travel up to?
Dublin.
Yeah, and how long does that take you?
3.5 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. John, it's a huge commitment for a girl at this age to do that amount of training in the gym in the morning and the evening and then the high performance on the side of it. Tell the listeners how good she is.
Yeah, Mary is an exceptional talent, to be fair. The work that has to be put in is phenomenal, both on the club and the parents. As Mary says, they're up and down to Dublin every weekend. This weekend they were up there 2 days, they were up there Saturday and Sunday, so there is a massive commitment by all involved, and of course the most important person is the boxer, but that boxer needs a very strong team around him to get them over the humps and the bumps, as we'd say. Mm-hmm. As you go there, you know, as Mary said there, she does get up at every morning 6:00, does her strength and conditioning training, and varies it out every day, something different every day, and gets out to the club then to do her technical work and her sparring.
Yeah.
But it's all very important, and the food regime is very important as well, that it's clean eating, that it's proper, because obviously with weight management and so on and so forth, and Mary's doing very well with her weight management at the moment, to be fair. So, look, there's a lot of work put in it by everybody, and it's great to see the results. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's one level of national, and then when you've internationally going to the Europeans and Worlds now again is just another level. And for us all, as a club, as parents, as coaches, it's all learning. Do you know? There's an awful lot of learning in that for us all as well. And hopefully we'll bring home a medal this time round, and with the help of God, next term we'll have a couple of more going out there.
You'll have Jamesy on the bus next time,
yes,
as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we'll have Jamesy on the bus.
Hopefully he'll be on the bus with you. When we talk about women's boxing, I suppose, Mary, I mean, people talk about Kelly Harrington. Have you met Kelly on your travels?
No, I never met her.
Good God, we'll have to meet her. What about Michaela Walsh? No. What about Katie Taylor?
No.
Good God Almighty.
Not anyway.
Not yet anyway. But they're all the names that in many ways, Mary, have kind of opened that door that you can follow along as well. And maybe sometimes it's great maybe not to meet them or know who they are, because that's the door you're following. Kelly Harrington, of course, with 11 national titles. Michaela Walsh won her 11th national title as well, which overtook Kenny Egan, which is amazing, yeah. Because all the men talk about Kenny Egan winning 10, and I think there might be another one as well, and now we have two women sitting on 11, which is absolutely amazing. And probably the most famous Irish boxer is a woman as well.
Yes.
What drew you to the sport? People were sitting at home tonight and saying, my God, a woman boxer from Tralee. What took you into the gym the very first day when you were small? It was a sport you liked, or did you watch it? Or
yeah, I watched and was watching Katie Taylor and just decided to win and started off for myself.
How was the first day like? Did I give you some a bag to belt or did or how's
no,
it work?
Just doing the normal as you do, like boxing, bags, skipping, sparring.
Yeah.
I just fell in love with it. And
brilliant. It's lovely you use the term fell in love. Tell the listener what brought you into it. Why did you fall in love with it? Why boxing? Sure, you could be playing tennis or something, but you decided to box. Was it the competitive side? Is it the side that...
very competitive.
Yeah, that helped you to win. When you put your gear on and your gloves on and the bell goes, out you go. What are you thinking? What goes through Mary McDonough's head? I mean, do I survive the 2 minutes? Do I... All the training kicks in?
Well...
It's kind of,
she actually loves sparring. She loves getting in the ring and sparring.
Yeah.
You know, and because we were only talking about it even on the way in, and she just, like, we'd be trying to get her to move her head and everything, but getting, when she does get hit, which is very rare, she doesn't even mind it.
Oh my God.
So, but she does. Sparring would be her thing.
We were talking, obviously, just before this interview with Eimear Foley and the Women in Sports series, and they're on about strength and conditioning for young girls and female athletes and the whole lot. There's an awful big dropout, though, isn't there, at this age group? So obviously keeping them in the ring, I suppose, to use the pun, It's a good on the parents, it's good on the families, it's good on the coaches. That needs a bit of work to do that, though.
Yeah, I suppose what we kind of, what we're finding is working for us with the young people, like you said, it can be male or female actually dropping off. But we actually started up like junior coaches, and that keeps them interested. They're still competing themselves, but they're actually being part of all the elements in the club. So at the moment we have like two or three junior coaches, they go on and they do their fundamental coaching. And it's amazing because this weekend now we were away in the Wexford Box Cup, and we had one of our junior coaches helping John, and at the end of it he said, oh my God, I didn't realise everything that goes into it, and you know how enjoyable it can be. And it's kind of, we were kind of losing him, but now he's back in again and he's enjoying that part of it and competing as well. So I think it's kind of just, you need to kind of keep them interested in all levels, really, like, because there is other distractions there. But I think if you really love it, you'll keep at it. But I do, I was just listening to your previous caller, and definitely strength and conditioning we're finding within the boxing is a massive element to it. And even the Irish coaches, when we be speaking to them about, you know, what's the hints and tips with Mary and the difference between other teams, you know, and definitely the strength and conditioning element, you need that no matter what sport you're doing. That is very important.
Are you really excited?
Yeah, can't wait.
Can't wait. Have you ever been to Armenia before?
Never.
I haven't either. Yeah. But you're slowly but surely putting an awful lot of different countries on your travel. I mean, you've been to Italy, you've been to the UK, the whole lot. It's the other side of boxing, isn't it? You can travel if you're good.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's great.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah, I went to Hungary as well with the Munster team.
Wow.
In October.
My God, I'm with you. Really all over Europe. John, we'll finish it up. You said you want to come back with a medal. Obviously, we want you to come back safe and sound as well, first of all. How excited are you as a club?
Yeah, thrilled, to be honest. Do you know, to actually see the rewards of the work that we put in. There is endless hours, and not only in the club, but you're on the phone, you're organising, there's an awful lot of work being put in by everybody, and it's great to see the likes of Mary and other boxers getting the opportunities out of this.
Absolutely.
You know, it's unbelievable, to be fair. So look, 100% is good.
Okay. Well, Mary, we wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Whatever colour medal you come back, with or without, you are always welcome here at the table at Terrace Talk and the whole lot. And we'll keep James's seat over there for him on the next trip as well. We wish you the very best of luck, and hopefully we'll get over the line and bring us home a medal. You've already made us proud. It doesn't really matter, okay, whether you bring it home or not. That was Mary McDonough, and we wish her the very best of luck heading to Armenia. Thanks for everybody on tonight's show. Big welcome to Mary Conroy. She's up after. Thanks to Keane. Thanks to Ivan. And congratulations to Mary O'Sullivan from Tralee, who did know that it was Pat Spillane that picked up the cup, even though Mickey Ned was the captain. We kind of fooled a lot of you, and that will be heading out. Ivan will put that in the poster. He'll probably deliver to your house. You never know. He's a good producer like that. We will do it all again next week. My name has been Donal Barry.